Welcome to Technovation, a weekly conversation with people who are shaping the technology landscape. I'm Peter High, president of Meta Strategy, advisor to technology executives, Forbes columnist, book author, and your host. Each episode of Technovation features insights from top executives and thought leaders at the intersection of business, technology, and innovation. If you like what you hear, we'd be grateful if you give us a rating on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. And please subscribe so you don't miss a thing. Thank you. My guest this week is Greg Clark. Greg's the Chief Executive Officer of Symantec. As CEO, he sets the company's vision and strategy and is focused on driving growth and advancing innovation through Symantec's cyber defense platform. This platform is designed to give the customer an economic advantage by delivering advanced capabilities pre-integrated. Prior to his current role, Greg was the Chief Executive Officer of Bluecoat, which was acquired by Symantec in 2016. Prior to Bluecoat, Greg was the president and CEO of Mincom. He was also the founder of E2Open and Dascom. In this interview, Greg argues that detection and automation are absolutely critical in the era of prevention. He cites that in today's cyberspace, companies report as little as 7 minutes between first infection and disaster. So it's critical that organizations be able to detect and automate the response to those threats. At Symantec, the company has used artificial intelligence to improve its ability to defend, as Greg describes in this interview. We also discuss Symantec's four-pillar cyber safety umbrella, the importance of having consequences for those who try to steal data, the value of zero-trust infrastructure, and a variety of other topics.
Greg Clark, welcome to Technovation. It's great to speak with you today.
A pleasure to be here. Thanks for taking some time.
That's my pleasure indeed. Well, I thought we would begin with a bit about your history. You've been a security executive multiple times over. You have started companies, Dascom, E2Open, Mincom. You've been the CEO multiple times, Bluecoat, now, of course, the chief executive officer of Symantec. Mm-hmm. I'd like to actually go a little bit further back and understand your pathway into security. Why security?
How'd that ever happen?
Yes, exactly.
You know, I think if I go all the way back to the beginning of time, you know, I worked in a Unix software operation at Bell Laboratories, where I had a lot to do with some ports of the Unix operating system and then some of the I/O subsystem pieces of it. And I learned a lot about fundamentals of, you know, operating systems and how things are secure and, you know, all the things people try to do when they reverse a binary to find problems and all that. You know, I stared at that for many years. And, you know, how did I really end up in security? Well, at the beginning of the internet, when the World Wide Web was invented, you know, we were sitting at Unix System Labs working on things, and we were looking at the HTTP daemon, and I was talking to a couple of colleagues that were in the cubes next to me, and I said, you know, if we put some security on this, this might help this change the world, right? And we ended up moving to Santa Cruz, California, and starting a company called Dascom to work on bringing some security principles to the web, and that ended up being acquired by IBM Corporation and was Tivoli Access Manager and that product. And so I learned a lot about, you know, identity and operating system security. I had some other products that were in the operating system layer of security that ended up in IBM's portfolio. So I spent a lot of time working on operating systems and security systems through the 90s and wrote a lot of code. And if you ever start a company and you don't have any money or any venture, you learn a lot about finances quickly. So I tell people I got my MBA on the street, right? Which is largely true. After that, you know, I worked at IBM as Distinguished Engineer for Security Systems, and then I'd solved all the security problems in my mind for a little while, so I started a supply chain company with IBM Corporation called E2Open, and that went public on the NASDAQ. Later on, it still is a very important piece of electronic supply chain, and also the aerospace and defense supply chain. And then did another turnaround at Mincom, which was successful. And then I took over Bluecoat in 2011. Strangely enough, the primary Dascom product was a reverse proxy in the, you know, Tivoli Access Manager product line. And I ended up at Bluecoat, which was the leader in forward proxies. So, you know, technical security stuff there. But I am still a very technical CEO. I, you know, learned my way around Wall Street and financings and turnarounds along the way. So I have good operational chops as well. But I would say fundamental ethos is around security systems and, you know, things that I really like. I love working on it. Mm. You know, it's, you know, I was on a call with our engineers last night, which was very exciting for me, which was talking about how to get our data protection software to work better in Office 365 and Azure. Mm. And I was looking at the APIs for the file system inside OneDrive.
And, yeah.
You know, I kind of like that stuff sometimes.
Well, and I can imagine, you mentioned, so you've been in security for 3 decades now.
Yeah.
And the evolution of that, I mean, of course, the things you were solving for 3 decades ago are very different from what you're solving for now.
That's right.
And in some ways, emblematic of how dynamic the space is. In many ways, unfortunately, it's a very dynamic space, right? And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that evolution.
Yeah. You know, I think one thing's true about security, and it's stood the test of time for the 3 decades that I've been working on it, is that it always changes. And you can never predict what the attack, or the big attack vector, is going to be 2-3 years from now. You know, for example, if you want to clock back a year ago and you go to the year before that and said, who would have predicted the pollution on computers for Bitcoin mining? That was probably nobody, certainly not me, right? But that happened, but the methods and techniques that the bad guys use will always change. And so I think as you think about capacity inside of a company, in a security company, you know, a company like Symantec, it's really about making sure you've got some working on tradecraft, working on the over-horizon problems, and you got to keep your ear to the ground on what's happening in the sort of black hat community around tradecraft and vulnerabilities and the exploitation of those. So I think, you know, as you really look to, if you're a CIO or a chief security officer and you're looking to what do you need in a partner, there's always a core product that someone's going to be vending, a service or a product that's important. But really what's important is the agility of that organization and their ability to adapt onto things that are showing up or to be open enough to integrate with the new stuff, but it changes all the time. And if you think about what's going on today, if you DevOps, you know, DevOps is a huge attack surface. What if you get an implant like NotPetya was an implant that did catastrophic damage at plenty of companies? And, you know, how does that happen? Well, if you can get into the development cycle of commercial software, it's a serious problem. Well, bad guys are working that really hard right now. And supply chain of software is really important. How do you fight it? How do you protect against it? You know, these are all things that you need some research labs, you need some over-the-horizon radar. That's one example. A year from now, it'll be another story. A year from then, it'll be another story. So, you know, as you think about the short lists of partners that you need, you know, keep in mind that software expands to consume all available resource in every company in the industry. And at Symantec, we have a separation between R&D and our research labs. Research does not report up into the R&D P&L here. So we have time to spend on the future. And I think that's a really important question to ask your long-term vendors is, how do they think about that? How do they see that? And I think Symantec has proven time after time to be first or to find something first or to protect something well, and you know, I think we have good cred there. Mm-hmm. Long answer.
But an important one.
Yeah.
And I wonder how does that team remain current? What is the investigation process like? How do they, you know, as you talked about, we're sitting here today in Mountain View, we're in the center of Silicon Valley, the heart of innovation.
Yeah.
And with each innovation comes new threats that are in many cases unanticipated. It's the nature of taking risks, which mm-hmm. is the core definition of innovation,
yes.
that then yields unintended risks mm-hmm. of new surface areas, of, you know, new ways in which the black hats, as you put it, can gain access to the enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you, what's your process, your team's process of doing that thought to determine what the new vectors are, what the new threats are, and then the anticipated or the development that will become the responses to them?
Yes, I think that's a really good question. And I think we do have immense visibility into what's happening, you know, as we sit here right now in the attack surface of the world and the threats that are getting through. So we have a very substantial managed security service business where we're actually monitoring these advanced threat problems for huge multinationals that are present all over the world. We do see a lot of activity from that gives us a unique point of view on things. And I say, outside of the United States, we see serious malware platforms that are executed against another state, like, you know, what the Iranians would do to the entities in Saudi Arabia. If you did that in the United States, there'd be some serious consequences. You don't see those kind of attacks here on real critical infrastructure that you will see in those places. Well, Symantec's present there. And so we do see a bunch of things that are hard, you know, for everybody to see because they don't have the scale and they don't have the breadth of deployment as we do. And so I do think that that's important. That even significantly differentiates us even from big regional telecom players who, you know, have a good purview of what's going on in the region, but they, again, are not seeing it globally. So we have a very good point of view there. Also, we are heavily deployed on the endpoint and threats show up there. And whether that be a mobile endpoint or, you know, a Mac or, you know, Intel-based, you know, Microsoft or, you know, Windows-based computer, we see a ton of things there that are very helpful to us. And so I think visibility at Symantec is one of our core differentiators into what's happening and how we see that. And so I think we have been very good at being able to quickly analyze and deploy protections against new things. Mm-hmm. And also we have a point of view on what's going on that is, you know, valued by a lot of our customers. Mm-hmm.
One of the challenges, as we were talking about earlier, one of the challenges for the modern CIO or CSO is as the threats evolve, developing the ecosystem around you in order to protect oneself. I have to chuckle as I think about your response to your earliest entree into security and how you reached a point where you felt like you'd kind of solved that. You know, there's no solving it today, really. Yeah. You know,
I was young and not as learned as I am now. Right? If I was in those shoes again, I would have done things differently.
Exactly, that's funny. But so as a result of that, I wonder, you know, what advice do you have for CIOs in thinking about the ecosystem to assemble around them? Of course, it begins first and foremost inside the company. There are a lot of, you know, education and training and so on, but also assembling the right partners.
Yeah. So I think there's a couple of questions I would implore upon CIOs to ask their vendors. One of them is, what are you doing around the closed mobile operating system? And I'll elaborate on that a little bit. You know, at Symantec, we don't call them closed mobile operating systems. We call them modern operating systems. Operating systems where the binaries that are being run on it have been validated by the vendor and stamped okay. iOS is a good example, Windows 10S, and the mobile part, because we believe that in the future, all platforms will be mobile. And so how do you protect threat and risk in that environment? And I think you just ask that question to your vendors and see how they answer it. And if they're looking around the room and don't understand it, I think their relevance to you in 36 months is probably not strong. Mm-hmm. So that's one question. And the other one is, as you move to running on other people's infrastructure, like cloud, you know, the big three, the Amazon, the Microsoft, Google Cloud, and in the regions down in the world, as those are probably going to be the local big telecom platforms as well, service provider platforms, you know, Deutsche Telekom in Germany, British Telecom, and, you know, Telstra in Australia, whatever, NTT in Japan. And you're going to now move a lot of workloads to these because the economic cycle of not running them yourself is very beneficial. What are you doing about attack surface in there? Mm-hmm. How do you think about that as a vendor? And just assess the answer. And if the answer to those two questions is not strong, I believe that vendor may not be a long-term part of your platform or of your trusted few that you need for that. The other thing is, it's just too many. You can't administer the 50 you got. And if you're a big company, I'm hearing customers tell me they got 170. Mm-hmm. Different pieces from different vendors over different times in different territories. The chaos in there is too hard. Mm-hmm. And then the fourth point I think you've got to get to is openness. There is not one company in the world that can solve the security problem. When I was a young whippersnapper at IBM, I thought I could for a couple of years because I had, you know, the exuberance of youth. But then as I matured, I realized that's impossible. So it takes a village. And your core vendors need to be very open at the API, open at the business agreement, open at the ability to compete with even, to integrate even with your worst competitors, you know, in the best interest of the customers. I think it's three things. You know, you've, the new world of mobile plus cloud, you have to have a good story there to be long-term and then open. Mm-hmm. And you know, there'll be legacy. The stuff you got's going to be around for a long time, so you got to take care of business there too. But I really think those are the big three. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. And I think, you know, at Symantec, we have a very large investment in these modern closed operating systems and how to take care of them and how to detect anomalous behavior. This is where the world of deep learning and AI comes in, and behavioral analytics, and then the ability to enhance your view of an endpoint over time as it's being used.
Yeah.
So you can really, you may start off risky, but a few minutes later, you may have a different point of view that is less risky. And then the infrastructure question, you know, can you trust the infrastructure or should you trust the infrastructure? I think this is a topic that's being discussed. I think at this year's RSA, it'll probably be the hottest topic. Usually comes under the banner of zero trust as a sort of here and now buzzword. And I think what that, you know, you hear a lot about Huawei and, you know, can you trust this stuff? And you know, I have a point of view that says you shouldn't trust any of it. You should rebuild the trust within the context of the application resource, the data you're accessing, who the user is, where the user is, and what the endpoint the user's on is, and whether you like that endpoint and everything else that's on it. So you've got to build up that with the context of access to that data that you're responsible for from the ground all the time. And I believe that security, and you know, at Symantec, you know, in our integrated cyber defense platform, that security is an overlay on the infrastructure. Just like what happened with Skype and WeChat with an overlay on the telecom. It's going to be different infrastructure run by different people, and really being able to live on any infrastructure is extremely important. You know, interestingly, this week we're hearing about the U.S. saying, you know, no Huawei, and the British saying, we think we can manage untrusted infrastructure. And I think it's really moving that discussion to say, do we trust the infrastructure? Mm-hmm. And that's how we should think about it in the cloud era. I like it, if I can continue on a little bit, if you take your endpoint on a tour, and you know, you get up and you walk out of here and you've been on the Symantec guest Wi-Fi, you go to the hotel, you're on the Hyatt guest Wi-Fi, you get on United, you fly back to Washington, D.C., you're on the United Airlines Wi-Fi, and your company or your organization that you're with has given you a constant coverage protection model across all that. You never had to redo anything, and access to the resources that you were using at the corporation may have changed when you were in different risk profiles, but you could still function without having to take control of it and re-log in or retouch something or grab out some token or whatever it happens to be. And I do believe that zero trust and not trusting infrastructure allows us to deliver a product to the market that really changes things massively in the software-defined perimeter, of the perimeter being the people, the perimeter being the application you're accessing. And really, I think that as we move into this running on everyone else's infrastructure world, which is sort of one of the dot points under cloud, mm-hmm. we can change things. And what we're doing in integrated cyber defense, that's a huge piece of it.
I would love to understand the cyber defense platform that you're developing and the partnerships and some of the updates, milestones along the way. We'd love to, something I've heard a little bit about, but we'd love to understand kind of how that's oriented.
Yeah, and I think, you know, just a couple of comments about that. You know, there's a couple of pieces of integrated cyber defense as a concept. One of them's a technical blade about how we should think about integrating things and making things work. But one of them is also just a business blade that's of the top set of security products that you would self-integrate as a CIO or as a CISO. There's a set of those things that should come together integrated. And there's a set of vendors that make them. And at Symantec, we believe we can just give you an economic change in delivering those things pre-integrated so that your endpoints and the encrypted communication to the bridges in the cloud where you're going to go to the web or you're going to go to your email are just taken care of. And your CIO organization or CISO organization doesn't have to put them together. And the procurement costs and the three life sustainment costs are way cheaper. And when it's cloud delivered, it's actually doable, because if you're trying to hold together three clouds from a self-integrated story, I think that's got a lot of challenges in terms of the changes that are coming in them and making sure they still work and who was there. So there's, whose throat do you choke when it doesn't work? So I believe that there's an economic story around integrated cyber defense on just a vendor consolidation. And, you know, for those of you that remember Sesame Street, for us old people like me, you know, it's which of these things belong together and which one doesn't, right? And so we want to give you the pieces that belong together integrated. And we want to do that at an economic shift that allows you to do more with the resources you already have, so you can solve some of the problems that aren't solved. On integrated cyber defense, moving to the technical plane, right? This is where in the media you'll read a lot about which platform's better, which one's going to win, all this kind of stuff. And I think that you know, there won't just be one. You know, a lot of these platforms are coming up out of next generation firewall vendors, or coming from companies like us. And you know, firewalls and firewall equipment, we believe, is an infrastructure layer discussion. It needs a robust security story. But in cloud, when you're running on multiple infrastructures, trying to drive a security program that is anchored in a piece of infrastructure is probably going to be challenging. But we do believe that's a vibrant market. There needs to be good, solid technology there. You know, and Cisco and Fortinet and Checkpoint and Palo Alto are doing a good job there. But if you think about running on everyone else's infrastructure, we don't control that. You really need an overlay that's different. And at Symantec, we're focused in on that part of the market. And we like what we have in our integrated cyber defense platform and the APIs and ability to integrate with other products that aren't in the core products that we integrate. And in there, we have a program for ISVs that can come along and build into our platform fabric. That's going very well, and we have quite a few of them that have built product there. And, you know, we'll be talking more about that at the RSA conference. But to give you an example, and I always say you really don't have a platform until another vendor has built product for it and then makes money from it, so because people bought it. Okay, and so I think this is a very important checkpoint for where they got a platform. We have a very good relationship. As an example, I mentioned a company, Bay Dynamics, that does an orchestrator for DLP or data protection violations. They built on top of our platform. We have a huge install base of data protection technology. And as events come, they can correlate and orchestrate those events to automate resolution. It's a very popular product now, because it's hanging off the side of the Symantec integrated cyber defense platform using the APIs that we give, and many of our customers have got great results from. And I think we had a big dent on that company's revenue because of it. And so I think that's an example of what's there. But you know, we really believe in that platform. It has to be there. We need it to integrate the pieces that we deliver. So our web proxies, our cloud access broker, our data protection, and our multi-factor authentication callback are all built on our ICDX platform. We couldn't integrate them between development teams if we didn't have it. Right, so we're eating our own cooking on that, and I think we've got some great examples of ISVs that are also in there. Final chapter on that is customers call us up sometimes and ask us to integrate with our hottest competitors, and we do. And we've built plenty of integrations between core parts of our product line and a competitive product, because it's better for the customer. Because sometimes they can't change, and definitely can't change on a consistent time horizon. Openness is important, and I think that this platform approach is necessary. And you know, we are definitely a huge believer in it and purveyor of it. And you know, we'll see how it goes over time.
Yeah. So you talked earlier about the use of machine learning and artificial intelligence. You've also talked about the vision of the cyber defense platform and its comprehensiveness. You know, a lot of what you were doing and investments you're making are allowing people to go from reactive to proactive defense, which is very important, especially as things get so much more complex, leveraging technology to do what humans can't do. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that.
So to talk about the prevention part. You know, we are in an era that prevention matters. You know, this is, if you get a malware like WannaCry or Petya, you know, you've got, you know, companies have reported 7 minutes between the first infection and disaster. So it's not like you can have a set of hunters in a SOC that are going to look at that, think about it, collect some data, work on it. So, you know, the detection element of cyber defense needs to be closely tied to the prevention side, because you have to automate the shutdown of these kind of problems. And even if you shut something down that you shouldn't have, that's a lot better than $350 million to clean up a crypto mess from a nation state havoc wreaker, right? So I believe that we are in an era of prevention. And when you're in an era of prevention, you need automation. And so what do we get from that? I think, you know, if you run a managed security business, managed security service business like we do, you understand standard run books of what do you do when something happens. And so all the big SOCs in the world, whether they be in a finance organization or a government or a telco, implement standard procedures for different kinds of problems. We believe at Symantec that those can largely be automated and enhanced by automation with AI. And so if you think about a queue that is sitting there dealing with a certain kind of event, like a penetrated Microsoft laptop, what you do to fix that, you can largely automate that. And then if you have some AI watching it, it can get smarter over time as to how to maybe auto-detect that a little better or make it go a little bit better. So we believe, just like what's happening in the workflow automation industry, you know, companies like UiPath and Automation Anywhere, those same techniques hanging off the side of a integrated cyber defense platform to automate what is happening on the edges of that and put some AI around it to make it better is exactly right. So we believe we can take a lot more expenses out of the security administration, and that's important. The other major use we have of AI is in the prevention and detection side. And we have an experience with one of the big malware crises of a couple of years ago when WannaCry came out. We had some government entities call us up and say, we know your software knows how to stop that. Can you tell everyone else? And our response at the time was, our AI convicted that, and we're trying to figure out why. So it worked, which is great, and shut it down. And today, we have better tooling in our AI to actually understand why. Okay. But so we have a huge implementation in our endpoint technologies and our network technologies of artificial intelligence and deep learning to just improve our ability to defend. And I think we are one of the vendors that has had exemplary results from AI and cyber defense. And the propagation of WannaCry and modern Symantec problems didn't happen because of it. And I point to that example. And we started our Center for Machine Learning and Artificial Intelligence many years ago, before it was trendy and before some of the AI unicorns were even started. So we have, you know, I think we're under-marketed at Symantec in our prowess on our use of deep learning and artificial intelligence, but it is well and truly embedded in our products and delivering results. But we do see, you know, a couple of planes of it. There's a prevention and detection plane that's really important. We're there. And in the automation plane, which is a little more sensitive and a little trickier, we're heavily invested in R&D and you know breaking the back of that problem.
Very interesting.
Is that helpful?
That is very
There's
helpful.
A lot there.
No. It's a complex set of topics, so I appreciate you peeling back the onion in such a productive way. I wanted to conclude by asking you, you've been in security for so long. You think about this throughout your professional life for obvious reasons. How is some of this translated into your personal life, if you don't mind my asking? Like, as friends ask you for recommendations on, you know, the steps one should take in order to make sure that their own information is, and of course, you are the head of a company that has enterprise as well as personal tools. So this is something you still also think about professionally.
I'm curious. Yeah, this is a really good question. So one of the things that I really am personally interested in, and I have been for quite some time, and I think a couple of years ago I was in Washington, D.C. talking about something. I said the defining topic for this generation will be privacy and consumer privacy and the obligations enterprises have to protect and defend that. And long before the inspection that Google and Facebook and others in social media are getting now, we started our privacy lab in Germany and that was very well received. So we are not a reactor to the media fervor around privacy at Symantec. We were in it long before, and before it was front of mind for, you know, leaders of companies and consumers. So on the personal side, I really am heavily invested in delivering solutions for consumer privacy and helping organizations that are custodians of consumer data to be able to be a custodian of it safely and responsibly. And so we have two things happening at Symantec for that. Our consumer brands under Norton and LifeLock are heavily invested in consumer privacy. And also our data protection technologies in enterprise we are working with companies all the time to help them understand and protect their data better. But where people in my personal life show up is like, you know, when it was reported in the VPN filter that, you know, nation states were in the Wi-Fi. Pretty much everyone on my street came and knocked on my door that morning. Greg, what's going on?
Yeah. You know,
what do I need to do?
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, I live in an affluent street, so they were all like pretty serious execs.
Yeah.
And it was like
there were broader implications to those questions.
So I turn into the local IT guy.
Right? It's like living next to a physician.
That's
You know, my arm's hurting. Can you check it out,
yeah.
Doc?
Yeah. But I do believe that you know, in the consumer space, you know, cyberspace is in society. It's going to be there forever now. We're changed. Just like the telephone changed things or the radio changed things, we're forever changed. So everyone has a responsibility to take control of their safety in cyberspace. And so we have worked hard to bring the Norton product to, rather than a PC malware protection agent, to a service for normal citizens all over the world to make them and their families and their homes safer in cyberspace. And to do that, we have four pillars of that. We have the malware pillar on all devices that we've always been famous for. We have an identity protection pillar, which is really protecting you from thieves that are out trying to profit on your good credit and steal from you that way. And there's many ways to do that. We also have the privacy vector, which has two pieces. It's a communications layer privacy. Think of that like a VPN. And then there's the ability to not leave personal exhaust, to start up a browser session that doesn't leave exhaust. If I wanted to Google a heartburn drug, I don't want a healthcare provider buying that search term to enhance their record of me. You know, if I'm buying heartburn medicine all the time in my 20s, I'm going to be expensive in my 50s. Not great. So we need some privacy around how we use the internet for certain kinds of projects. And then the final one is home and family safety. Where's my kids? What's going on? Screen time? Are they sleeping at night? You know, all these topics. And so that whole intersection we are delivering as our cyber safety umbrella under our Norton brand. And I'm happy to report that I was in Australia checking my son into college on the weekend. And I bought a computer at the local Aussie computer store. And they talked us into buying a very expensive one, which I was trying to get a cheaper one, but we ended up with an expensive one because my son's going to study IT and thought he needed to run some stuff. And I said, you'll never use all that power, but you'll write bad programs if you have that much power. Uh-huh. But, you know, I'm an old school guy. So anyway, we ended up with the one with all the power. And he said, you need a security agent on that. And I said, which one's best? And he said, oh, Norton. And I said, why? And he said, well, you know, had a pretty good talk track. And so I said, well, what about the one it came with, which was from another vendor? And he said, that one got encrypted by WannaCry. And I thought, I said, that's the right answer. I'm the CEO of Symantec.
Yeah. Now I will buy the more expensive.
And I bought the $380 one.
Yeah.
But I just think that we do have great brand at Symantec in the world. You know, people, every time you've checked out of a shopping cart for the last number of years, decade, next to the checkout button has been a Norton check mark, and people have, you know, just in normal land where they don't know anything about IT, they have a cyber safety affinity with that mark. And I think we have a huge opportunity to deliver around that. You know, it's been my personal goal. I actually like it when we make people safer. You know, I love coming to work working on cybersecurity problems. It's way better than any other tech because it has a real purpose. And I think at Symantec, we've also tried to move the measurements from, you know, we blocked 1,000 of these or 20,000 of those or a billion of those to consequences. You know, we're running ads at the moment around 150 arrests. And this is not consumer cybercrime arrests under things like LifeLock. This is real bad guys trying to wage serious havoc on things for their profit. And I really want to move the cyber industry from, you know, we blocked and we stopped to consequences. Now, it brings risk to your company because bad guys might try to come and get you to prove a point or something. But I do believe that we need to have more consequences on the black hat side. And I applaud what's been happening at the FBI and the DOJ on passing legislation that says if you don't have cybercrime laws on your books in developing countries, that you may face U.S. sanctions later in, you know, in a few years from now. So they have enough time to get ready. But I think, as you know, in society, the industry and national governments around the world, you know, sovereign governments need to really bring down these consequences. And I would like our brand to be associated with, if you try to steal from companies that we're the protector of, there's a higher chance of getting caught. And, you know, it's like having a dog in your home, less break-ins. Mm-hmm. Okay? Mm-hmm. Because not that they couldn't break in, they didn't want to try.
Right.
Okay. And so I really believe that, you know, success in the cyber industry has got a lot to do also with the fact that we need consequences as we go forward.
Excellent.
Okay.
Well, Greg Clark, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been a great conversation.
No, I appreciate it.
Yeah. Excellent.
Thanks for tuning in. Please join me next week when my guest will be Phil Quaid, the Chief Information Security Officer of Fortinet.